Welcome back to Q&A, Catch Gallery podcast series. I'm Chris Reno. Okay, so this one goes way back, 2019. Sandy Dias and Sue Coleman, two artists that work at Cornell College in Iowa. Although I think that I heard that Sue was retiring, so I hope she's enjoying her retirement and finding lots of time to paint and make pastel work. You know, both of these shows were really wonderful. They were running concurrently, one in the Kadich and one in the Morrissey. Oil paintings by Sue and photography by Sandy, and we get into both of their careers. Enjoy.
Anyway, we have with us today Sandra Louise Dias and Susan Coleman, the two artists that have their work out currently. So let's give them all a round of applause and thank them for coming.
And thank you for all being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Yes, we are.
They're both here tonight together because they both teach at Cornell College in Mount Vernon. So they have a professional relationship that spans a number of years now, and they've shown in the past together. And when it came time to start, Yeah, it's been going on for a while, and you guys had a show together. What was the last time you showed together?
Last fall.
Last fall, yeah. So I kind of thought, well, maybe we just do the same thing here and fill the gallery with their work. So Susan has the paintings and drawings, pastels that are out front. And Sandy, I thought we'd start with you. So we talk about the work that's in here. These are all photographs, but you're not necessarily just a photographer. Is that correct? What do you call yourself these days?
I'm not real particular, but I mean, if I have to write a statement, I call myself a visual artist.
Okay.
Because I do more than just straight photography, but I'm, you know, old school, I'm a photographer.
Okay.
I primarily use photography.
Kind of your go-to?
It's been my go-to for years and years and years. I started at the University of Iowa, going to undergrad in my 30s. And my daughters went with me, not to school, but they moved there with me. And I started studying photography. Peter Feldstein was one of my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone now. And I left the photo program. I just thought there was more going on over in Intermedia with Hans Brader, and it was more exciting, and it just seemed like a more vibrant group of people, and I liked it. It was strange to me because I didn't understand that performance art and video. I had no concept of what that meant, and so of course I'm attracted to it, and I switched over pretty quickly. Well, I was in theater, was in photography, and moved over to Intermedia all within 2 years, I think. And so, yeah, I come from a background of studying performance art, using the body, and then video art, which I have a video. And I love video because it's like moving photos.
Yeah.
Plus, I can use sound.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really important because I love music so much. Music's probably my biggest love in my life, other than my family, more so than photography.
Oh, really?
Music, yeah, music. I love music, and I really feel it's inspired me in a lot of different ways. And so anyway, no, I wouldn't say I'm purely a photographer, but yeah, use photography.
That was the intermediate part was what I was thinking of and how that was informing this work.
Definitely did. Definitely informed this work. Maybe not specifically this work, but my whole lifetime scheme of work over time.
Well, just, I mean, let me back up. This show was put together through a grant, is that correct? You were able to get a grant to package this show?
At first, I started this work, I think in 2017, because I had a show at Nick Hotek's gallery.
Okay.
And I said to myself, I got to do something different. I had been making installations of color work, and very similar, but I would just tack everything on the wall.
Uh-huh.
And I'd use multiples and repetition and a lot of color, black, mixed black and white with color.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and I thought, well, that's not going to work for Nick's gallery because he's a commercial gallery. Right. I have to mat and frame.
Right.
So I don't know. I used to use collage where I would use a lot of Scotch tape and masking tape, and I would draw in my photos and I'd rip them and cut them up and everything. And I thought, okay, I think maybe I'll see if I can manage to use Photoshop. So I did a lot of learning by watching YouTube videos about how to use Photoshop and collage. That's how I started making these. So primarily I used old images. Sue and I were talking about that the other day. So I spent weeks just looking through my archives of photos, and some of these are from quite a long time ago and some of them are pretty new, and some were taken with a real professional camera. A 35 SLR, DSLR, I'm sorry, DSLR, but some of them were taken with an iPhone. So, and some were taken with my little point and shoot that's back here, my Canon point and shoot. So I don't really care about what kind of camera I use.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me. I'm not an equipment nut.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, that, yeah. So, yeah, the framing of these, it's almost as if you... My perspective when I was hanging it is like, well, these feel like they want to break out of the frames, but this is sort of a, this is you want, you know, meeting that demand, you know, being realistic about a commercial demand and how can you package an installation to go, you know. And so I think that's part of what sort of drove us to loosen it up and rearrange the exhibition, was that just, I was trying to be very careful of the center line. I was hanging everything very carefully. It just felt like it wanted to...
I just really liked the way you put it up, Chris.
Okay,
I walked in and I was like,
wow. We were a little worried.
It kind of looks like notes.
Yeah.
It does.
I like it. Yeah. I like a lot. I like how the color moves around, and I like the different shapes. And
we had two painters hang the show, so that's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, look at the way these two are put together. Yeah, they just work perfectly. Look at the hose, the red hose, and then look at the
cord,
red color cord above, and
exactly.
Yeah, I really like juxtaposition, as you can tell.
Right, right. And that's another way in which you seem to kind of diverge from the typical photographer. Just these pairings or these dialogues or collages of images, and then, you know, I was really struck by the titles then that you assigned to them, and you know, I mean, sometimes they're really pretty funny, you know, or yeah. I mean, the best one for me, I keep laughing about the A Goat.
Yeah, you know,
it's A Goat. Yeah. I mean, they're not always that obviously funny, but sometimes they maybe offer a clue, or sometimes they do some kind of pun, or they speak to the color. But I mean, it seems like you have a wide range of foundational reasons for putting these things together. But you want to talk a little bit about how you start pairing or grouping images?
I like what you said.
Yeah.
I like everything that you've said. It's really fun to hear what other people think of your work.
Yeah. A lot of times it's color, right?
Yeah. A lot of it is formal.
Okay.
It's color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the red lines. But it's also formal, like shapes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, paying, and I talk to my students about this in photography all the time. Lines and shapes, you guys. Lines and shapes, forms.
Yeah.
See where your eye goes and why it goes there, and everything. So, well, like, I don't know. I'll go back and just kind of repeat myself again about I hunt. So I've already done all the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say, ooh, I need a picture of such and such, I'm going to go out and shoot it. I just don't do that. I don't know why. I see them as visual poetry. So for me, it's a lot about having this like journal of images, archive of images, and then having the fun, sometimes it's fun, of going back into it and for hours just staring at all these images and going, oh, I really like that. I hope I can find something to put with it. And I put it in a folder. Mm-hmm. Just put it in a folder, sit it there, and then I just hunt. I go through all you know, years of photos, and, oh, I like that. And then I'll think, oh, I wonder if that will go with that. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, after I have them all together, I start thinking what might fit. Hmm. So like Hotline, Dave Moore, that was a candid, that's a musician friend of mine, and he ran out of gas. It's his car sitting next there. It was nighttime. Ran out of gas, but he had a gas can, and he didn't have any money. And we were outside of George's, and he goes, I go, Dave, what are you doing? Well, he'd been painting all day. That's why he looks like that. And I said, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, I don't know. You got $5.
Yeah, he has a day job, though, doesn't he? Even though he's a pretty amazing musician.
He's got a sense of humor too. Yeah. So he saw me, you know, he knows I got my camera out. I got my iPhone out to take this picture. And so he's like, I'm getting my lighter out.
Yeah. Whoa.
So I really like that. And then I remembered I had this photo from Drake University. I had a show there in 2012, I think. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture in their art building. They had, that was the white phone and the red phone. And I thought,
that's
a weird thing. I need to take that picture. And I never used it for anything, but I had always remembered it. So I thought, Hotline.
Hotline, and the white and the red, and the red and the white. Yeah, for sure.
So that kind of convergence of idea and image and just simple formal associations. Yeah, I mean, over and over again, and then sometimes with groups of these pairings together, you know, like these two, the two blue ones with the sea, like we started to find ways in which to kind of make groupings on the walls. And,
I didn't see that. The seasides. Well, I have kind of an infatuation with stuff that we use. So you can see like those old motel chairs and that little chair that's in the kitchen with the lamp on. That was at Jamie's, my younger daughter's house. And telephones, telephone booths. Wherever I travel, I take, that was that one over there that says Telefono was in Italy.
Okay.
And so I definitely have an eye for stuff like the old typewriter that was in an alley in Iowa City. I found that outside. Mm-hmm. And, that purple car with the green grapes, that was in Maquoketa.
Oh yeah.
And I think being a photographer, what the best thing that I learned from being a photographer, I've learned a lot of stuff, but you're more observant of your world. You're just really paying attention to nooks and cranny and people. I pay attention a lot to what people look like and colors and forms and kind of the oddness, quirkiness of life. Oh, I was going to say, a long time ago in an artist statement, I wrote something about, I compare my pairing and playing around with images and collage kind of to a Tom Waits song. Because I love his music, and I love how he can take totally incongruent ideas and words that make no sense together, kind of like the beatnik poets did, like Allen Ginsberg,
right.
And they can put things together that you're like, what? And then you're like, wow. That's what I really like that.
Yeah, create a particular sensation or aesthetic. So Tom Waits, he's a LA based musician, but his wife's from Illinois. So much of his music's about the Midwest, you know. And
Kathleen.
So it's like I look at some of these photos and I think about walking around my hometown and seeing things, you know, like for Truth and Beauty, you know, like that so much of that is straight out of my hometown, you know.
So where is your hometown?
Galesburg.
Oh, yeah.
So, I gotta come down there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird town. The more you look, the weirder it gets, you know.
Yeah, but
that's true for Maquoketa. It's true for Iowa City. It's true for everywhere in the Midwest.
All
you know?
Over. There's, especially Wisconsin, too. There's lots of quirkiness over there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, any Rust Belt town, they're all manufacturing brick, you know. So, I mean, you're not from the Midwest, or
yeah,
you are?
I'm from Iowa.
Oh, you are from Iowa.
Eastern Iowa.
Okay.
Yeah, by the Mississippi.
And do you see a kind of Midwest poetry to that? I mean, this is not all about the Midwest. Certainly, there's a lot of there's stuff from all over here. But you know, accepting and for as artists, accepting and celebrating what beauty and mystery is in the Midwest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the everyday.
Yeah, the everyday.
Just the everyday stuff. I'm really. I mean, Sue's work. I know we'll be getting to that, but I look at her work and it's so sensuous and beautiful and all about nature. I love nature, but you don't see a ton of it in my work. But what you do see generally has a human touch. I guess maybe not that tree, except it's in a cornfield. So
right,
yes,
right.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
The juxtaposition of, you know,
the human interaction,
human nature and nature.
Right.
Interesting.
I mean, this too. I mean, I look at that and I think that is such. It's just wild.
It's a soybean field.
Yeah. That brilliant yellow.
Fish is.
And he's pointing, and the buffalo's pointing the opposite direction. So it just pulls you both ways.
Yeah.
I just love it. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, would you print these? Let's say you got a grant for three times
the
size.
Grant.
Yeah, would you have printed these larger? Is this the ideal size for all? I mean, a lot of them are iPhone photos, so you have limitations there technically. But given total freedom, would you, how would these change at all, given total freedom?
Not this time.
No.
That was the idea, to keep them small.
Keep
I want, because, you know, I,
sort of screen size, right?
Photographers have
size.
Been getting bigger
yeah.
and bigger and bigger and bigger, and I have went along with that game, and I just thought, I don't think I'm going to do it this time. I want little jewels.
Mm-hmm.
I want little pockets or something. I don't know. I just envisioned these being even smaller, and then I made some smaller, and I didn't like it exactly. So then I made them a tiny bit. I was experimenting with size.
I see.
And I made them a little bit bigger. So you did ask me about that grant, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
So originally, no, there was not a grant. I made about 20-some pictures or so, or collages. And then I wrote a grant for $4,000 for the Arts Council, Iowa Arts Council. And that's the money I use to expand it.
I see.
Okay. Now I'm double the amount.
So
you were able to frame it too.
Yeah, and I framed it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. And then each one has its own size, really. So you let the work kind of define it.
Yes, which is kind of a problem then, because then you don't get to really reuse your frames very well.
Yeah, you can't recycle those frames, can you?
Yeah.
I like to recycle my frames for sure. And when I was hanging the show, I was like, well, every one of these is a completely different size.
That is correct. You know? That is correct.
I like the way that you're using two different, slightly different variations on the molding too. That one is warmer, one is cooler, and you know that I think that makes a real difference with the image too.
Yeah.
It's a subtle thing, but it makes a difference.
Yeah,
I knew I didn't want white frames because that's another thing that I'm getting sick of.
Yeah, everybody's doing that too, right?
Wash frame, yeah.
And I knew I didn't want to go with my metal frames, which is what I generally do because they're a lot cheaper, and you can, you know, this kind you put together.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much easier.
Yeah, they're way easier and way cheaper. And I just thought, you know what? I'm doing it.
Yeah. Got a little state money to do it. Why not?
Yeah, I'm just gonna do it, and I don't know what's next though. That's soon I've been talking about that.
The next step, yeah.
The next step, I don't know what that is.
So are there any other pieces in the show in particular that you want to point out as, you know, touchstone images or groupings or ones that started the series or ended the series, or is the series ongoing?
A goat, I think, was made. Truth and Beauty may have been my first, and a goat was probably pretty quickly after that.
Okay.
That goat is my friend Renee's goat. And that door, I took when I was in Copenhagen with my friend Lena. Mm. And I just like, ooh, I like that door.
What a cool door, yeah.
I like words a lot. Mm. So that's another thing I think that I'm kind of looking at when I look at the world, like tickets and air
the words
and
in the image,
things like that, and sea. And I was curious if anybody had any questions about a particular one.
Yeah, please ask questions in time.
And then maybe I can kind of riff on that.
Well, do you in Photoshop, do you manipulate to bring some of these associations out, or are you just really just finding the associations in the image?
What do you mean?
Well, like say for color. Like let's say you're seeing a color similarity, do you go in and color correct to further bring that forward? Or?
Not usually. So you mean like if I see a yellow like in that person dancing, do I try to match it?
Yeah.
No. I mean, there are definitely times when maybe that green in that dress up there, Truth and Beauty, I may have went into Photoshop and said, pull up the green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I didn't do any of that, what do they call it, picker?
Yeah.
I'm pretty basic.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty basic as a Photoshop person.
Right. So far beyond just simple color correction and just seeing those associations.
Yeah.
You're not purposefully going in there and changing like spot colors or anything. Yeah. That's really interesting. And so a big part of it is the chase and the hunt to find the two things that talk to each other.
Yep. That's definitely it. And some of it takes me quite a while. Like I'm looking back there at that long, big one. It's called Rock and Roll Baby, and I played around with that one a long time, trying to figure out what to put where, what, how, you know. Oh, I don't really like that picture, I gotta bring in a different, I don't know. Some of these I played with for a long time, and some of them I didn't play with them hardly at all. I just would bring them together and go, that's it.
They just work.
Just work. So I think that's kind of like life.
Yeah.
Something work real quickly and something takes a lot of time and effort. I really like the one of Reds and Blues. Mm-hmm. And that's a later one that I was playing with. Because the picture on the left of the man being covered by a kind of tattered looking United States flag or American flag, I had taken that, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, and I had shown it before, but never really liked it. I just didn't know what to do with it, but I liked the image.
And then, by itself, it wasn't quite
it wasn't exactly what I wanted, and then I saw that picture of Doug Roberson, and I thought, I like those two together because they're both headless, and the colors match up really nicely. And then I couldn't figure out what to call it. And then with all this political strife I thought maybe Reds and Blues, but that, you know, it's also the Ben Scepter, so it was the blues, some of the blues. And I was like, well, I think that works.
And that gap in the middle.
And that gap
in the middle. Some
of them I put gaps, and some of them I don't.
I was going to ask about that.
And I think that's, people ask me why, how do I choose, and I go,
if it makes sense.
Not really sure. Yeah. I just, kind of intuitive. Yeah. It feels like I need to make Like uh-huh. Those two needed to be separate. Those two needed to be separate. Uh-huh. But telephono, that needed to blend all together. So
yeah. It becomes one composition. Yeah. Yeah. Well, unless there's any questions, yeah, we'll move on. Does anyone have any questions for Sandy and her? Please.
What's your thought process behind Dream Girl?
Dream Girl. Well, I think basically I had the photo of, and I can't think of her name, on the right. And I really liked the colors and how kind of performative she was and how she was in some ways possibly attempting to be the dream girl. And then that was a setup. I did not set it up, but it was a setup in a photo shoot that Jason Smith set up. And that's kind of a good question. The colors primarily, and then the idea that, you know, she was, it's not really her. It seems like it's a, like she's acting to be staged, like she's being somebody else, mm-hmm. and a character. And so she looks like maybe the dream girl in the book. I don't know.
But they're from completely different periods.
No. Yeah, they are, right. They are. The dream girl looks like it's from the 40s or something, and this was present day dream girl. But, you know, she's embodying those red lips and she's got painted fingernails and she has a really old dress on. Excuse me. An old dress on. Vintage. And her hairdo is somewhat Betty Boop.
But that pairing came together later. I mean, it was not, those two weren't constructed to be.
No, they were not constructed together, but they were at the same shoot.
Oh, at the same shoot.
And Jason had organized the shoot.
Oh, okay. So there was some color similarity. There was some
color similarity going on. So that one was a different circumstance.
Yeah. Cool. Good question. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, Sue, let's turn to you now. Sue's work's all down the Morrissey, but I brought a few of the pieces that didn't quite make it into the show, so get a sense of what we're talking about here with the three that are left. I had to take one out of the four.
There wasn't enough space.
I mean, they could have fit, but it would have been tight. It would have been tight, so we ended up going with just three.
I like the way you hung.
Turned out okay?
Oh, God, okay. I think it turned out great, yeah.
Thank you. So, do you want to just speak a bit about your basic process?
Sure. I started out working in drawing media primarily, as a young art student, and I had a kind of a preference for black and white, and I was very much interested in form and just trying to understand form and space and things like that, and I'm always very much interested in nature as a subject matter. But then as I moved from an undergraduate, I took painting classes and stuff like that, but I never really felt like I understood how to make color work for me. Mm-hmm. It always seemed like it was like too powerful or something. So I stuck to black and white very much for a long time, but I would go out and draw from the landscape. And then when I came to Iowa, and I studied with a couple of people who were pretty amazing painters, and I found myself being drawn more toward color.
Who were your painters?
Well, the painter that I studied with primarily was Ben Frank Moss.
Okay.
And he came to Iowa in, I want to say, something like 79 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, maybe earlier, but left about 89, 90, something like that, went to Dartmouth. But I was fortunate to be there when he was there. Yeah. I also took a lot of printmaking.
Okay.
And I studied with all the printmaking professors, but Virginia Myers kind of took me under her wing. I'd had a really rough critique my first semester where I wasn't really sure what the professor was talking about, but I felt as if maybe I just shouldn't be investing in a graduate program.
You're a woman at Iowa.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's be honest, it was probably not an easy road.
It was tough. And I hadn't found my niche, and I was married to a printmaker, and there were sort of schisms between those two departments, mm-hmm. Not for the students, but politics. Yeah. And it had to do with money and politics and stuff like that. So,
sure.
So you could get caught in the middle of people's feuds, if you were a student of both places. So that was a problem. That was a real problem. But Ben was one of those people who actually talked to printmakers, And so I kind of got the feeling that it was okay to be married to a printmaker and be a painter, That was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it had been okay all through the history of art, from the time there was
some
a printing
reason
press.
There, and, it was,
but
yeah.
not here, And so she told me that, Virginia told me that if I wanted to be an artist, I was going to have the hide of a rhinoceros and the nose of a rabbit. And so that was one of the things she told me that kind of stuck with me. And she said, don't let anybody tell you that you're not.
Virginia, I only knew Virginia a little bit, but she struck me as the type who was, very proud of her department and cautious and protective, but she didn't seem like the type to really...
No, she didn't suffer fools gladly.
Yeah, yeah.
But she loved her students, and if she saw someone who was genuinely obsessed with the idea of, making art, mm-hmm. she was in your corner 100%, and she would walk through anything to help you get there. But Ben was... He was such a mentor to me, and he had brought people like Wayne Thiebaud in from and Ron Graff and some really amazing painters from the West Coast who came and lectured, and these people, Don Weygand was one that he brought in, and I learned more from those people in half hour in my studio than I learned from some of my full professors in a year, just because they were not, they come in and they just tell you exactly what they thought about your work, it wasn't about how you dressed or whether or not you were anything other than just the work. And I felt like I was getting some information that I could actually use, And so I would, and he also introduced me to a lot of painters and poets and a lot of music that I was interested in. And every semester that I took painting with him, he always had us read a book. And it was not a painting book, and it was not an art book. It was a book of poetry, or it was a novel, or it was, a book about philosophy or something. And so he encouraged this interest that I already had, which was an interest in poetry and in literature and religion and things like that.
Hmm.
And so one of the poets that I've thought about, and one of the poets that I know Sandy is very much interested in, is William Carlos Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little quote here that I thought I could read that I think relates to both our work. Our work doesn't resemble each other very much, except in some ways, you see the expanses of color in the sky, or maybe you see trees or a field or something in Sandy's work here in relation to other things, right? Whereas mine is probably pretty much straight on about landscape, right? But we're both dealing with abstraction. We're both dealing with, the big lights and big darks and how we try to draw your eye through the image, right? We're both dealing with that. And I think William Carlos Williams was one of those people who, he was an imagist poet. And not only that, he was also a pediatrician. And so he would go out to deliver babies or, rescue somebody who was having a problem, right? And when he'd get back to his car, he'd write what was in his head, probably kept him sane, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day. But he hung out with these artists at the 291 Gallery, people like Albert Stieglitz and Mark Strand, who were photographers, and painters like John Maron and Marston Hartley and Arthur Dove and Charles DeMuth. For instance, there's a painting called The Number 5 in Gold by Charles DeMuth, and it's based on a William Carlos Williams poem. Yeah, and I learned that when I was in grade school because my mom had to quit high school and she was a sophomore in high school to help the family. You know, people did that back in the day. They would, you know, if you had 12 kids, the fourth, you know, first through fourth would probably go to work at a certain point.
Yeah.
My grandma quit school and she graduated from the eighth grade and went to work for Brown Shoe Company. And I found out later that my husband's grandma did the same thing. They're probably both working in this factory at the same time, you know, as 12-year-olds, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my mom went to work when she was 16 and worked for Bell Telephone. But then she was taking this GED class at our junior college, and she was reading this literature book. And on the cover of this book, her American literature book, was a picture of the number 5 in gold. Talked about that relationship between Charles DeMuth and William Carlos Williams. So I have this really short passage, if you'll bear with me, and I think it relates to our work, but it's, he says, say it, no ideas but in things, nothing but the blank faces of the houses and cylindrical trees bent, forked by preoccupation or preconception and accident. Split, furrowed, creased, mottled, stained, secret, into the body of the light. And that's from a poetry book called Patterson. And that was about his town that he lived in, Patterson, New Jersey. Which maybe some of you have been to. It's
the movie was made.
The movie. That's right. Adam Driver.
Yes.
Adam
Driver was in that Patterson. Yes.
Seen that.
And
twice.
Who's our beat poet who is also from Patterson, New Jersey? He wrote Howl.
Ginsberg. Allen Ginsberg.
Wow.
I mentioned him. So, I didn't know he was from Patterson.
He was from Patterson. And the fact that there was a poet from Patterson named William Carlos Williams, he too could be a poet, right?
Right. Right. Well, I have Dorothea Tanning from Galesburg. So that's my...
that's awesome.
My star, what do you call that?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, Sandy talked about music. We love music. I mean, both of us do. And we like a lot of the same music. And I think when I teach drawing, I generally have my students listen to music. It's like part of the curriculum. I don't just let them just turn on whatever. But I have stuff that I think relates somehow to what it is we're doing that
That's
day.
A good idea.
So I try to get them thinking in terms of rhythms and patterns and,
should do that more.
You know, layering of shapes and forms in the way that music is an abstraction. Drawing and painting can also be abstractions. And you know, that's something that we share.
Let's talk about that with the work. So yeah, I mean, there really is. If we just take the one from the Iris series, is that what it was? What was it called?
Yeah, this is the one in the center. Oh, the one on the left.
Yeah,
that's a tiger lily.
Tiger lily, that's right. Tiger lily.
Yeah, some people call them ditch lilies, but I like tiger lily better because it's such a mishmash of the fragile and the ferocious. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Like, you find them in the woods where people used to live, right? Because they planted these lilies in the ditch or wherever, and now the house is gone. Maybe there's a foundation, maybe not, but those are
still there.
Yeah,
they keep going.
And so when I was a little girl, I grew up along the river just like you. Crystal City, Festus, Missouri. I don't know if you guys know
Crystal City area.
It's south of St. Louis. But my grandpa was the mayor of Kimmswick.
Wow.
Have you ever heard of Kimmswick? Population 200. It was swallowed up by the Mississippi in 1973 and then swallowed up again in 93 and then again in 2008.
Oh, I just...
But there was this woman who saved it, and she was a 7-Up heiress, and she saved the town. And now it's like this little Disneyland for grown-ups. You know, they have like apple butter festivals and stuff like that. But my Aunt Grace would take me into the woods and point out these different flowers, or we would sit on the back porch. My parents had bought this house from the Catholic Church, and at one time it was a monastery. And there were these, you know, priests and monks who lived there. And then they got a bigger monastery. They probably moved down to Peebly or something, where they had a big monastery. And so this house, they raised 12 kids in this house. And it was right where their backyard, this Joachim Creek went into the Mississippi River. And the railroad tracks, the Burlington Northern, was right there too. So they had the railroad tracks, both the river and the creek, and that creek would come up. But we'd sit on those stone steps and look out, and she would say something like, "Watch that stick right there. You see that little stick right there?" And I'd say, "Yeah." And she'd say, "Watch that stick." And all of a sudden it would start moving. Because it wasn't a stick, right? It was a stick bug. That's what she called it. Right, but it was a praying mantis, right? Is that what they're called?
Or a walking stick?
Walking stick.
Yeah.
Praying mantis. I haven't seen one. Yeah. I haven't seen one since I was a little kid. And then I saw one on the glass between the Commons and Armstrong. On the glass
recently.
Of this door. It was like 5 years ago. It was like the first praying mantis I'd seen in like 37 years or something. Like, oh my God, there's a praying mantis.
There aren't many anymore.
Taking a picture, you know? But I use a camera.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I use a camera when I'm walking around.
So you walk around, you just go for hikes? And
I go for hikes, and I walk around with my... I used to walk around with my dog, but he's got some hip dysplasia issues. And so... and this one's based on a tree in my yard, this little dwarf magnolia, which was blooming like mad in, you know, March. You know, March. And then the rain came,
and
then
the ice came.
Yeah. And then it died. Totally died, okay? And we clipped it back, and it came back.
Yeah.
And now it just blooms once a year, not twice a year, because it knows better. But it survived, right? Yeah. And it still makes these beautiful little tulips.
So you'll frame an image then with the camera.
Sometimes.
Or you'll
I do.
Or you just
sometimes.
Or do you
I just
work
took my
from...
iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, I used to use a camera, like a regular DSLR or 35mm or something, and then have pictures developed at the drugstore. But they quit doing that, you know, cuz iPhones.
Yeah.
And so I started taking my own pictures. And then I could play with them on Photoshop too, and crop them or whatever.
And
do you
transfer the image? Do you just work from the image?
No. I just you know, I'll print a little, like a kind of a note-taking kind of image, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe this side. And then I magnify it just with my eyes. I don't use like a projector or anything like that.
Yeah.
There are people who do that.
Oh, yeah, no, that's why
as
I was curious. Yeah, how careful you were with the original image, or it's more of an inspiration for
it's more just the idea of, so I can remember, you know, how varied the sky was, or how warm or cool those greens or whatever were. And I change things, you know, I don't try to stick exactly to the photograph. But you know, I used to work just plein air, and that's really hard to do in the winter time. Let me tell you, you know, it gets to be about 50 degrees, and your hands they quit operating, and oil paint does
oil
not
paint
set
doesn't
up,
like it either,
man,
yeah.
and watercolor does not like to set up that well either, because it wants to freeze before you even get. Pastel's not as bad, you know.
Let's talk about that. So most of this work is pastel, right? Oil pastel?
A lot of it is. No, a lot of it, the big ones are soft chalk pastels.
Okay.
Because they can lend themselves to a larger format. And those are 18 by 24.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're all that size.
So those are the soft pastels.
Soft, yeah. They're like Sennelier's or Rembrandt's or Schminke's sometimes or... they're Rownies. They're just different kinds that you can get that are really smushy and really They have a lot of pigment to binder.
Yeah.
So they're just mostly chalk. There's hardly anything holding them together, you know. Mm-hmm. If you drop one, it's just it's like, oh shoot.
And the work and the work is delicate.
Okay,
too.
Let's
if you
just
drop
the
work.
The paper on
the exactly. Yeah, one stick is like $10 maybe.
Well,
so
they're like, you know,
more.
I buy them on sale, but they can be like $4 or $6. Those beautiful handmade ones. Katie knows. They're just gorgeous. They're, you know, somebody, well, they, you know, they take the pigment
the cake,
and they have molds and a little bit of gum arabic, and it's mostly pigment, and they form them, you know, like they're making little cakes or something.
Right.
And it's
do you move them around a lot with your fingers then?
No, I often start out, I'll start out with the harder pastels, just to kind of, and I'll start with a light color so that I can change it a lot, and I work on a toned ground, like a buff color, like a paper bag color, you know, or the color of this chair or something, and then that way you get color immediately, you know, in relation to the ground, right? So the blues become really apparent, and the oranges and the different colors start to pop.
Excuse me.
And then I start working the creamier kinds of softer, more expensive ones as I go along. And then sometimes I'll go back in with those harder ones. They're like the Faber-Castellis or the, what are those ones? They're sort of like Prismacolor, but they're sticks. Mm. You know, I use different ones.
Okay, so you combine them all together.
And sometimes it's kind of fun to, like, carve into that really soft stuff with something really hard and more waxy, and stuff comes off, and so you've got like indention even.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. It's like you're carving.
I do
some blending. Sometimes I'll use a, you know, like one of those spongy things that keeps them from breaking, that come in the box.
Oh yeah, the foam,
you know, the foam
there,
things.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I'll use a piece of paper that I've twisted up, or sometimes I just wear out my hands. Or I'll put dental gloves, you know, like the nitro gloves on, and I'll use those so I don't totally trash my fingers, because I've got this problem with dry skin. It probably has something to do with drawing with chalk all the time,
just
draws the moisture right out of your skin. So that's kind of a handy little tip, but once you get into it, and it's really mushing together, the nitro gloves get in the way.
Yeah.
So at some point you have to like sacrifice your hands a little bit.
So very touch oriented, and very like there's a rhythm to them, and like
listen to music, you know, and I like to listen to instrumental stuff, and it's just all kinds of stuff really, but. It's something that kind of has a liveliness to it, you know.
Uh-huh.
It'll kind of carry me and take me out of my head. You know, take me out of my, you know, you haven't done the laundry yet, or whatever. the car has no gas and you have to drive to the such and such tomorrow. You know, all that stuff. You know, I'm trying to drown that out and just get into a kind of more of a feeling about what it is, and after a while you start to feel like you're in that space, and it comes back to you what you saw when you were out there. So that's the really fun part, when you can get away from your little, you know, studio space with the table and the easel and the winter and the snow that's falling, and think about a landscape where there are flowers growing.
Oh, you do that. You work in the opposite season, even,
I
really.
Do.
Yeah.
Often. I often
That's wild.
Do. Yeah, it was hot July when I was working on that really cold balloon out there.
Oh, really?
It's very amazing how it. I imagine if I took my temperature, you know, it would actually. It would
transport it. Yeah.
Working on. Well, it feels that way.
Uh-huh.
You know.
There's been studies about that with the pink color in a room. People feel warmer.
Oh God!
Yeah,
it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Whether people stay or leave,
yeah,
and
yeah.
all those things. So, does anybody have any questions?
Yeah.
about the...
Yeah, we have a few minutes left. Any questions for Sue and her landscapes?
I've done most of them in the Mount Vernon area because that's where I live, but then I've also spent time in a lot of time in Missouri because I have family down there, and there are some beautiful places back in the hills along the river and stuff. Like, are you from Missouri? I kind of got that feeling. And then also I have a really dear friend who lives in Lancaster, Wisconsin. Anybody from Wisconsin here? But Boscobel, she has some property that she and her husband bought, and it's near is it the Wisconsin River? The
Viroqua and Trumbull.
Yeah, maybe. There are a lot of beautiful wetlands up there, and she's got a stream that runs. There's a stream that runs through their property, and then it goes straight up this hill. And it's just Wisconsin is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
I want to live there, honestly, especially in the summertime. You know?
I'm just curious how you tackle just all of this. You capture in the photo, so you have a little bit of a distance. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just so much that you pack in there. The rhythm, I mean, there's so much complexity that you weave together.
But you know what it is? It's shape organization first, right? So you've got your horizon line, whatever it is. Sometimes you have more than one, right? Mm-hmm. It has a horizon line, but there's trees above the horizon line, right? So you've got a horizon line, but then you've got this weaving of these plants. So there's like this sort of a line across, and then there's a diagonal that cuts it. So you've got these different shapes of greens, darker, lighter, and darker. And then those are punctuated by the little flecks of blue or white or whatever in the sky.
So you work a larger movement of that one color through.
That's right.
You work it through a major movement. And then
you can work back into it, right? With the greens, come back and model those shapes so that they sort of feel like they could be those tiger lilies. When it's actually just orange, right? It's fun. It's really fun. But mostly it keeps me from losing my mind. So that's kind of the thing. I have another poem if you want to hear it.
Absolutely.
Okay, if you have time.
We do.
I had a wonderful teacher in undergraduate school, and his name was Phil Saltz. His given name was Ephraim Lloyd Saltz. He was Russian Jewish, grew up in Buffalo, and his dad escaped one of the pogroms before World War II. This is one of my little sketchbooks. I make little collages and save things that I think are important. So this is a little drawing by Phil Saltz of a leaf. And he sent me that he sends emails to friends that still keep in touch with them. But I studied with him from 75 to 1979. So this is a poem called Leaf from 1968. They're business partners. They walk through the park to get to the other side. They're in a hurry. Joe stops to pick up a leaf. Ben says, "What are you doing?" Joe says, "It's a leaf." Ben says, "I know it's a leaf. What the hell are you picking it up for?" Joe says, "It's interesting." Ben says, "You're crazy. You could have dog shit on it or something." Joe says, "It caught my attention." Ben says, "What are you, nuts?" That's your kind of poem, isn't it? Okay, so he sent me this, I don't know, he sent me this in like 2002.
Did he write that?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he wrote it. He lives in Dennisville, Maine, but he was my first college art teacher who shepherded me through.
Phil Saltz,
yeah. What a person, what a character he is. And he's in his 90s, and he and his wife have property they bought back in the 60s near Dennisville, Maine, down east. And it's just like they went to visit their neighbor because they had heard that his wife had died. And they walked through the woods thinking, we'll take them a pie. You know, we'll take him a pie. Cause he's so sad. He lives by himself, right? Mm-hmm. So they head, you know, due east or whatever it is through the woods, and they get lost. Their nearest neighbor, they get lost, okay? And it finally, it's getting dark, and they can't find this guy's house, so they just head home.
Yeah. And eat the pie?
And eat the pie. But I mean, that's how far out they live.
Yeah, out there in the woods. Huh?
The closest town, I think, is Whitting, Maine.
That reminds me of a movie or something.
Isn't it great? Yeah. I know, it's like that, what was it called, Straight Story? The guy
who wrote the lawnmower? That's my dad.
Is that your dad? Oh my God.
Yeah, he rides a lawnmower.
I love that movie. That is just... That is so Iowa.
Yeah,
that is so Midwestern. And
David Lynch, too.
With
David
all
Lynch,
the
David
stubborn,
Lynch and Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, my God. And all the stubbornness and all the, I can do that.
Yeah, you can do it, yeah.
Of any
you're
Midwestern.
Nuts.
You're nuts.
Any other questions for Sue or Sandy before we call the night? No? Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
I really recommend you take a look at the show and check out Sue's show out front, and then ask them any questions while we have the artists here, okay?
Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
For sticking around and listening to us.
That's great.
That was way easy.
No,
This has been Q&A from the Kadich and Morrissey Galleries at St. Ambrose University. We hope you've enjoyed this program. All rights reserved. 2023.